fine job that you did, both on brief and oral argument, on behalf of your client. You have the deep thanks of the court, and so does your firm for having allocated so many resources to this project. Thank you.
I join in that. Thanks. With pleasure.
Indeed, our thanks to both counsel, and the case will be taken under advisement. The next case of the day is number 042710, Stergalapagos against First Midwest Bank Corporation. Mr. Lesser.
Thank you, Your Honor. To be clear, I would like to open with 7 minutes and save three for rebuttal, not three and seven. And within that compress of time, I'd like to make 2 points. One will be why this case matters, why people around the country are watching and are concerned about the case, and the other is to address head-on what I think is this core statutory provision at issue and what it means, and to address certainly where I think I have to begin with, which is with what Congress wrote and did. I'm going to address subsection A, that's capital A of 15 U.S.C. 1681B, no parentheses B, A3A, not E.
Could we actually, though, move back one subsection above subsection 3? Because your opponents at page 15 of their brief have set forth both A2, and then they go into the A3, both capital A and capital E, subparts. And the thing that struck me about A2 is the fact that it permits a consumer reporting agency to furnish a report in accordance with the written instructions of the consumer to whom it relates. And then A3 goes on to the things that we'll be discussing. But what occurred to me anyway is that what you seem to want is to collapse 2 and 3 together, because you want specific written instructions in that financing form that people fill out at the car dealership. You want the form to say, I give permission, you know, to seek credit reports both from GMAC and anyone else who you want to submit it to, or whatever the language may be. And I don't know why that isn't an A2 situation.
That would be an A2 situation. Our position is not. It is not that there has to be a credit application from the consumer. Our position is that that's certainly what the district court judge said was our position. Our position is that the consumer has to participate in the transaction at issue. I'd like to demonstrate why that is so with an A3.
There is a separate
A2 provision where somebody writes and says, yes, such and such can pull my credit for a particular reason, but we're not dealing with that. We're dealing with the A3 extension of credit type of situation.
But all I'm saying is your idea of the meaning of the phrase credit transaction involving the consumer is one where the involving the consumer part needs to somehow have written instructions from the consumer or specific permission from the consumer to say, yes, car dealership or GMAC, you can also shop this with First Midwest or whomever. And I guess the real dispute between you and the other side is the meaning of that phrase involving the consumer under capital A.
I absolutely agree. That is the main dispute. However, the consumer need not. Take Ms. Castro, for instance. She had a retail installment contract which was not an NMAC identified in it, rather Great Lakes Credit. She didn't write anywhere, Great Lakes Credit can pull my credit. I believe, given her retail installment contract, which she did sign, Great Lakes Credit could have pulled her credit. She participated vis-a-vis Great Lake Credit in her mind. That was an entity as to whom she was applying for credit, and it would not have been a surprise or fair or inequitable to her, and that's what Congress is concerned about when the consumer is involved in the FCRA. That's 1681 parentheses B. But let me get to the two clauses. If the clause, in essence, merely means relates to the consumer, I submit the sentence doesn't work anymore, because let us read 1681B3A without the first of the two involving clauses. It would then say, a credit reporting agency may furnish consumer report to a person it has reason to believe, and I'm an A, intends to use the information in connection with a credit transaction involving the extension of credit to the consumer. Necessarily, the extension of credit to the consumer relates to the consumer. And Congress, however, put both phrases conjunctively. It has to involve the consumer and involve an extension of credit to the consumer. In other words, First Midwest's position is fully supported if you take the middle clause out of the sentence. Plaintiffs submit that only by holding that the middle involving the consumer clause means some form of consumer participation in the transaction can that clause be given meaning separate and apart from the clause, the second involving clause, involving the extension of credit to the consumer.
Well,
and
in a sense, what you're doing is you're taking involving the consumer, which it's sort of a passive construction, and you're trying to make it an active construction in connection with a credit transaction initiated by the consumer or something like that. I mean, you're changing it a bit. Now, I can see what you're saying in terms of possible redundancy, since there has to be some difference between a credit transaction involving the consumer and involving the extension of credit to the consumer. Maybe the second part just defines further the first part, since there certainly are credit transactions that don't involve an initial extension of credit, like the E ones, you know, but we can get to E later if you want. But, I mean, I think A is the crucial, from my point of view, A is the crucial part here.
Right. No, I agree with you, and that's why I do think we have to ask ourselves, what did Congress put that middle clause in there for? We submit it accords with the dictionary definition of involves, and admittedly it's done in a passive, or I don't know if it's a gerund or participle, I was never very good at grammar, phrase, but when you look at a dictionary definition, involves mean participation in, and that's of course what the Ninth Circuit and the only other circuit court at least that's ever looked at this provision has held has to be involved. And
but
that's
the Ninth Circuit case, you must admit, I mean, first of all, they've got some language in their opinion that confines it. When you've got identity theft and the consumer never had any idea anything was going on, it's quite different from signing some piece of paper when you want to buy a Camaro.
You took the words out of my mouth, albeit the facts were certainly different. The holding of the court as to how we're going to interpret the word involving or the phrase involving the consumer was a question of law. And certainly the facts, of course, were exceedingly different, but the definition of the phrase doesn't change depending on the facts.
Well, but it may. I mean, they may have thought that involving the consumer meant that the consumer played some role in it, which would include your case but not theirs. I mean, I don't want to waste all the time on this point.
Perhaps,
but
sure. We could hypothesize that they meant something other, but I submit at least that's what they said. We also submit that it's consistent with the dictionary interpretation, with the FTC's interpretation, which is the Throne letter, and is the interpretation we submit that makes the most sense, because otherwise the door is open to any number of credit pulls where somebody merely agrees to permit one entity, and that's inconsistent with the statute's importance of protecting privacy and consumer choice and what's fair and equitable. And in that respect, I refer you to the letter that Mr. Sturgiopoulos got back from First Midwest Bank, which is at S4 of the short appendix, where they send back to him the GMAC document saying, yes, you applied for credit with us. And if you look at that document, page 8, S4, I don't think it's possibly fair to say a consumer would have believed that that was what they did, that they applied to this bank they'd never heard of whatsoever. I'd like to reserve whatever other time I have to my other point, which is why this matters. Thank you,
Mr. Weiss. We'll hear now from Mr. Varger.
Good morning, Your Honor. Craig Varger on behalf of Defendant First Midwest Bank. Your Honor, I think it's important, as counsel said, why is this case important to people around the country? Let's put it in context of why it's important around the country and why I believe the district court's decision is consistent with the language, the overall design, and the purpose of the Fair Credit Reporting Act, which is to make credit available to people in this country. Credit flows to the point of purchase, so to speak, where somebody's getting a credit extension via a retail installment contract or a loan. It's made available to that person in the microcosm of that instant. But where it comes from is a credit source and capital source way down the line.
But, Mr. Varga, I mean, let's be maybe a little more precise. The Fair Credit Reporting Act, certainly about, among other things, what you said, the extension of credit to people. But it's one of those legislative balances between, on the one hand, you know, accuracy and credit. It gives people certain rights to make sure their credit is accurate, and also privacy and credit. And where we draw this balance is implicated by how we read 3A here.
Well, that's true. I think that a case that the court recently cited, the Cole case, indicates that where the consumer initiates the credit transaction, there's less concerns about privacy than, for instance, in a pre-screening where the customer hasn't sought the credit. Here they have sought to engage that system.
Well, they sought to engage credit, and I guess Mr. Lesser's question, or the question he's asking us to decide, is, if I say, you know, I would like GMAC to make a loan to me, is that the same thing as saying I want any bank in the United States to make a loan to me? Some people might think those are two different statements, and he suggests that a very tiny change in the form, GMAC and other possible lenders or what have you, would administratively do the job. You know, and for all I know, 99.9% of people would happily sign away, you know, on that too.
I understand that change to the form would certainly help everybody out. The point, and I think we've addressed this in our brief, is that GMAC may not like that because GMAC wants people to finance with them,
yeah,
not with their competitors.
Tough luck. I mean,
and secondly, the design, and I was getting back to this, of the Fair Credit Reporting Act, doesn't require that specific authorization be the only basis for a permissible pull of a credit report. It can be the structural situation of where the credit, the person pulling the credit report is going to be involved in connection with the credit transaction.
Right.
And
that's exactly what happened
here.
Right. That's the essence of this dispute. Is it your concept, which is this sort of generic involving the consumer? The consumer has started this transaction. It's not a cold call. It's not all sorts of other things. They've started this transaction. Is that enough of a link without regard to any? I mean, it could have said nobody. It could have said any lending institution, not even GMAC, or it could have said, you know, Chase Manhattan Bank or anything. In your view, that's enough because it's really that the consumer started the overall transaction.
Yes, and because it's ultimately First Midwest or whoever else it was who was going to consider buying that contract that was ultimately going to bear the risk of payment. And if you don't have a mechanism by which the entity who's considering buying the contract and bearing the risk of non-payment of the contract, if you don't have a mechanism for them to assess the person's credit, well, they're simply not going to undertake to express a view on whether they're going to buy the contract or not.
Of course.
And the contract won't get bought, and dealers are not bankers. If dealers can't sell contracts, dealers run car dealerships, they don't run banks.
No one disagrees with that. I don't think Mr. Lesser disagrees with that. The only question is, does the consumer, upon initiating the transaction, have to give some sort of at least generic permission to shop the contract, or does the consumer, or is it enough that the consumer says, I'd like to buy this car?
I think it's enough that structurally the design of the act is that the customer's initiated the request, and that's why we have the provision Your Honor mentioned before, the specific authorization one, which could be you authorizing your landlord to pull a credit report on you when you want to rent an apartment. That could be that one, I think often is. Or it could be the more specific one that relates to credit that's really involved in this case, which is the A3A provision. And I think it's important to keep in mind, too, that what if you follow plaintiff's argument out and say in accordance with instructions and he somehow wants to limit who it can be sent to, well, think about it, in accordance with the customer's instructions. Does that mean that the customer can, pursuant to the, I think, A2 provision that Your Honor is talking about, the provision just above the one that's really an issue in the case, could he say, well, I only want the credit reviewers to look at my credit for the past year and not for the 3 years before that because I had crummy credit for the 3 years before that and good credit for the past year. The customer can no more limit, once he's engaged the process, the circumstances by which a person is going to assess his credit, then he can limit who, if they have a permissible purpose under the Act, can undertake to pull that credit.
I think it's different to say you're limiting the content of the report that A refers to and that you're limiting
well, that
who
could
can
be
go
in
ask
accordance
for
with
it.
The customer's wishes.
If I want to rent an apartment from Company A, I would not expect, you know, Company B to go off there and get my credit report. The unlawful submitting of credit reports is one of the major sources of identity theft in the country. It's a big problem.
Right, and I would agree with you that Landlord B wouldn't have a basis to undertake to pull a credit report when it was submitted to Landlord A.
Right.
Here, it's a different situation with the provision of credit and the sale of the credit obligation and the expressing of a view on whether the creditor who's going to buy it and the need to be able to make a credit assessment to undertake to decide whether you're going to be able to get repaid or not. Another thing I think it's important to keep in mind here is plaintiffs suggest that there'll be some horrendous pulling of scads and millions of times of credit pulls here. The design of the Act, first, there are practical realities in that there's a limited auto finance market. But there are other, many other instances under the Act where numerous credit pulls could be made. For instance, under the A3A provision that's an issue in this case, a debt collector, if the consumer's contract were in default, any number of debt collectors, a million of them to take an absurd example around the country, could pull that credit without any express authorization on the part of the consumer. With respect to pre-screened credit, the case I was referring to that the court had, I believe, here recently, there could be a million pre-screened credit applications or pulls so long as they comply with the dictates of what's required for a pre-screened credit. There could be many instances, even plaintiff admits that there could, under the 95 amendment or the 96 amendments to the Act, be a provision for a credit pool if the account was being sold of an existing credit obligation. Now, they say this one isn't an existing credit obligation, but let's assume that there could be one that plaintiff would find is. Well, there could be a million people in the secondary market who could pull that credit without any express authorization on the part of the consumer up front to have said that I want anybody in a secondary market to be looking at my credit. It is part and parcel of the, as Your Honor put it, the trade-off between privacy and between capital flows. We quote Alan Greenspan, the honorable Alan Greenspan, Federal Reserve Chairman,
long-serving Alan Greenspan.
And he's pointed out that the American credit reporting system is, frankly, the envy of the world because it matches up the ability to assess risk with provision of capital. And if you don't have an ability to assess risk, you won't provide capital because it's, frankly, all about whether you're going to get repaid or not.
It is actually a controversial system, however. I don't know if you follow the European Privacy Directive debates with the United
States.
Yes,
the Europeans.
They have a very different balance.
Some people say that the Europeans are very happy to have the government be able to look at anything with respect to your personal history and have private enterprise be able to look at nothing, and it's the obverse of that in this country. I've heard that touted in connection with those discussions, and it shows how different, I suppose, we all are as between Europeans and Americans. Some other things that I wanted to point out, that under plaintiff's view of the facts of this case, first of all, in the facts of this case, our view and the view of the district court was that plaintiffs were well aware that there were going to be a third-party financing source apart from GMAC and NMAC. And the documents that reflect that are discussed at length in our brief. They're discussed in the court's two opinions. Frankly, Judge Manning's two opinions are essentially the same, her opinion denying or granting the motion to dismiss but getting leave to replead and her opinion granting summary judgment. She caught the essence of this within both. But she points out that there was authorization of third-party financing independent of GMAC and NMAC. But it's important to point out, I think, that under plaintiff's view, First Midwest can't fit within A3A because you simply can't use A3A the way First Midwest did it here. And First Midwest can't fit within A3E because there's no existing credit obligation because there's this condition subsequent that the dealer is able to get out of the contract unless he can sell it. And the fact is you end up with a standoff. Nobody can do anything but chase your tail.
Without permission.
But the Act doesn't require that you have to have specific permission. And that's the key to this, is that these things are enumerated within the laundry list in the FCRA and that we've had in our brief here. They're not exclusive. They're a laundry list. And it is a careful balancing of entitlement to pull credit with the commensurate benefit of having received credit. And here there is a solid, this is a non-illusory benefit. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Varga. You have 2 minutes, sir.
Thank you. I am certainly in favor of efficient capital markets. I am in favor of before somebody lending money to an individual, they have the ability to check their credit. But that's not the issue that we're presented with. I said I'd return to why does this matter? It matters, and indeed people around the country, as I've discovered recently, care about this case because credit counselors, bankruptcy lawyers, consumer advocates and the like have been informing their people, and these are usually people at the edge, when they come in, they say if you want to go shopping for a car, limit the number of pulls you have against your report. Don't agree to blanket authorizations. Why? Because it hurts people's credit. It does. The more times that you are pulled, it affects you. And so the very issue that's presented in this case is real to the individual consumers. And that is a matter of choice and some degree being read into the statute, but I believe it's in there in that middle clause. Congress did use the word involved, the two clauses involving twice. There are two clauses in that provision, and I believe just as defense counsel alluded to the Cole case, I believe the privacy concerns that the court recognized in the Cole case, pragmatically recognized, certainly apply here. It will not defeat in any way, shape, or form the credit markets of this country if people have to have some participation in determination in an extension of credit. We're not under A2, which would be if I wish to join a club and you want to look at my credit, then I can authorize it. Nothing to do with extension of credit. That's what A2 would deal with. A3A deals with extension of credit or the potential extension of credit. And unless you have any questions, I think that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lesser. Indeed, our thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.